Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm here with Princeton head coach Matt Madelon. Coach, a lot to talk about.
A lot to talk about. Happy to be back.
So let's start with this. Princeton plays at Cornell Saturday. That is a noon faceoff. The women play at 3 o'clock, so it's a doubleheader, Princeton-Cornell lacrosse. Your team has a very simple task, win the game and have Dartmouth beat Brown, and you're in the Ivy League tournament, or if Brown beats Dartmouth, win the game by three or more and you're in the Ivy League tournament. It's a better situation to be in than a year ago where you needed help to get in the Ivy tournament. We can get into all the craziness after this, but in general, what are your thoughts?
Our thoughts are we're continuing with our playoff lacrosse mindset. You know, it's a must win for us. It's a very unique scenario to have to win by a certain amount, but I think it's just discussing it with the coaches and, you know, we'll discuss it with our team as well. You've just got to be able to execute our game plan and, you know, let the coaches handle the scenario piece and, you know, let the players play. But our goal is to get up there and put out a great performance, great product, and our goal is to win that game. And our goal is to win that game by three.
So I'm not going to bog this down with the whys all this is true. You can see that on the webpage. You probably already have seen it if you're listening to this. But basically what it comes down to is if Princeton loses the game, then Cornell is in and Brown is in regardless of what happens in the Brown-Dartmouth game. If Dartmouth loses to Brown, so Brown now gets to 3-3, Princeton's 2-3, Cornell's 3-3, and if Princeton beats Cornell, then all three are 3-3 with losses to Penn and Yale, wins over Harvard-Dartmouth. Goal differential becomes the tiebreaker, basically the way it plays out. A Princeton win by one goal or two goals puts Cornell and Brown into the Ivy tournament. A Princeton win by three goals, four goals, or five goals puts Princeton and Brown into the Ivy League tournament. A Princeton win by six or more puts Princeton and Cornell into the Ivy League tournament, which puts Cornell in the really strange position of knowing that if they lose by three, four, or five, they're out. If they lose by six or more, they're in. I've never heard of a team being in a situation where losing by more helps them. And then if you want to go back, Princeton wouldn't be in a better situation if it had lost to Brown by more than four. The more we had lost to, the better situation we'd be in right now. Goal differential capped at six. But if Brown had won that game by six, then Princeton would simply have to win the game. Don't think anybody ever anticipated these sort of bizarre outcomes. And as far as Cornell goes, I don't think a team is going to go into a game with a mindset of, well, we just need to lose by a lot and we'll be fine. That's just not human nature. It's not, you know, it's not what makes them the good program that they are. Also, they need a win outright, you know, to help their at-large cause. But given all the craziness, do you think that in any way impacts preparations of either team?
I really don't. I think each team's going to continue to prepare as they have all year. I think, you know, and I can only speak for our program, but, you know, we've been in the playoff mindset with our backs against the wall for the past three Ivy games. So we're going to continue with that. And, you know, our preparation is just that. You know, it's absolute focus. It's laser focus. It's stacked great practice on great practice and, you know, get ready to have a heck of an opportunity up there.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever heard of a situation where a team could lose by more and have it help them?
I haven't. It's really bizarre. And right now, as a lot of the Division I landscape is shaking up, there are a lot of bizarre
look at the NEC
conference scenarios right now where I think in the NEC, I believe five teams could end up tied, and a team that would essentially have a share of the regular season title
wouldn't
may not even make the tournament, which is bizarre. I mean, the Ivy League, I think up till a year or two ago, was decided by a coin flip at a certain point.
If this situation had occurred a couple of years ago, it would have been a coin flip between Princeton, Cornell, and Brown. And the reason that Cornell's in the situation it is, where if it loses by six or more, it's in better shape than if it loses by, or it's in, if it loses by three, four, or five, it's out, is that the goal differential piece breaks the tie between the three teams and creates a third seed, and then it reverts to head-to-head between the two remaining teams. If it was just goal differential determining who's three and who's four, and if there happens to be a tie for first and goal differential, then the head-to-head between those two teams decides it. But if goal differential decided the whole thing, you wouldn't have this situation. In the NEC, you could have that five-way tie, and it's not really outrageous for what needs to happen to create that five-way tie. Their tiebreaker is just simply fewest goals allowed. So it's kind of weird that, you know, you have different leagues with different tiebreakers and all these crazy scenarios at the end. But one thing I will say is it generates a lot of interest, and I think it's put a lot of focus on this game beyond just whoever wins goes to the Ivy tournament would have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very unique scenario. I can say I've never been in a scenario where, you know, your game planning or prepping, or at least having the, you know, in the back of your mind that, you know, you do need to win by a certain amount. And it does impact how we'll make decisions down the stretch if we're in a scenario, but, you know, we'll be prepared for those.
Right. I mean, like if you're up by one or two, you're losing. So you have to approach it as if you're down one in that situation or down two in that situation. And, you know, that changes how you do things. It changes how much pressure you put on the ball. It changes how you run your offense, you know, all those things. And the other thing is, if you look at the end of the Harvard game last week, a 19-15 Princeton win, Princeton with the ball up by four. I believe we were even man up at that point. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was 3 minutes and 56 seconds left. We held ball possession.
Yeah, basically, like, you know, and they sort of let you at the end because it's like dribbling out the clock in basketball. It's not going to happen this time because of all the different weird scenarios that exist for Cornell. And, you know, at that point, Cornell would really have to make some tough decisions that I don't envy them for being in the situation that they're in, especially a team like that that's, you know, won so much through the years and has so much pride in what they're doing. And, like, I don't even know what I would advise them to do with that situation. But
yeah, I've got no comment there.
Right. I mean, like, you know, I'm glad it's not reversed where you're the coach that has to deal with that. But let's talk about the game itself between Princeton and Cornell, and let's start with Michael Sowers. 247 career points for Michael Sowers. He's tied Kevin Lowe's record. Kevin Lowe took 60 games to do it. Michael Sowers, 41 games. The game's changed quite a bit since Kevin Lowe played, and the way Princeton plays has changed quite a bit since Kevin Lowe played. In terms of, you know, you talked about running out the last 3 minutes and however many seconds against Harvard. I mean, that was routine for Princeton. They were just, those teams back then were so skilled at keep away in the box with the stall warning on for like the last 7 minutes of a game. So like, it's hard to say if Kevin Lowe is playing today how many points he might have. But at the same time, it doesn't take away at all from the accomplishment that Michael has had, which is to catch Kevin Lowe in less than 3 years. He's also first, second, and third on single season scoring at Princeton. He has 82 points this year. He needs 1 point to tie his own record of last year. Obviously, 1 point would break Kevin's record. We talk about Michael all the time. His assists per game are fourth all-time in NCAA history. His points per game are fifth. Nobody in the last three decades has done what he's done. He's 21st all-time in career assists in Division I history, and he's a junior still. He needs one assist to tie Ryan Powell for 20th place. I mean, the stuff he's doing is ridiculous. 10 points against Harvard was just sort of routine, but yeah, you know, just, I know you talk about him every week, but what more can you say about him?
We're really happy for him. We're happy he's on our side. We're happy he wears the orange and black. He's a remarkable kid. He's a better person. He's a great leader, and he works his tail off. It's incredible the amount of extra work he puts in. So when you see a young man like this reap the benefits, you know, again, I always say it, he'd answer. All he wants to do is get this team to where it needs to. But you know, we're all very proud of him for his accomplishments. I mean, it's truly remarkable.
So Princeton and Cornell have combined for 56 Ivy League championships. They will not get one this year because Penn has already clinched the championship, but this has been the best rivalry in Ivy League lacrosse basically since day one of the Ivy League. The two dominant programs by far, 9 NCAA championships between them, all those Ivy League championships, all the great players, all Americans, so many great games back and forth between them, so many great individual battles, you know, that I could just think of through the years, just so many great Princeton-Cornell games. Is it something a little more special when you're playing a team like that?
You know, it's always a rivalry game. I mean, these Ivy League games, they're all big, but it really is. I mean, the Cornell one, it's always our last game on the schedule, you know, as the Ivy schedule doesn't rotate. So it's a big one, and it's one that's always marked on our calendars. But just knowing it's our last regular season game, and it is up, you know, it is at Cornell, this is a huge one for us.
So let's talk clearings. Princeton, I don't know if you've even noticed this. I didn't notice this until the other day. When Julie Greco, my colleague at Cornell, who does a great job with their team, she sent an email out to all the Division I athletic communications contacts asking them to check their opponent's clearing percentage. She wanted the NCAA ranks your clearing percentage, doesn't rank your opponent's clearing percentage, wanted to see where teams stand. Cornell is fifth in the country in defensive clearing percentage. Princeton's the best clearing team in the Ivy League. But the other thing I noticed is Princeton is 228 for 264 clearing, which is 864. And after a year ago where Princeton really struggled in that, that's a great improvement. But the other thing I noticed is Princeton's opponents are exactly the same, 228 for 264. It's the exact same number. It's a little freaky. I had to look at it a couple times to make sure I was like looking at it correctly. But one, it's been a great improvement in the clearing game. But two, Cornell is one of the best cause turnover teams in the country. They lead the Ivy League in cause turnovers, cause 11 a game. They clearly ride well. So what do we attribute the success in clearing to this year, plus what do you do to prepare for a team that's going to try and pressure you as much as they are?
This was a big focus of our staffs coming out of last year. I think that, you know, we felt that we had too many self-inflicted wounds in the clearing game where, you know, we put our defense back on their heels after a failed clear. We gave up a large percentage of goals after a turnover in the clearing game. So we spent a lot of time systematically, player development, skill development, in terms of just getting our system. I think and you know, me sitting here somewhat upset because coming out of the Harvard game, that was our worst clearing game all year. You know, we unfortunately made a handful of mistakes against their 10-man ride. But prior to that, I think we were top five in the country, and I think now we're in the top 15. But
still first in the league.
Regardless, no, it's been a big focus of ours. I think that, you know, with how efficient our offense has been, you know, our goal is to continue to up that efficiency. And by doing that, it means getting those guys the ball and getting and retaining possession on our offensive half of the field. So we put a lot of work in the preseason. We put a lot of work in, you know, throughout the week. We work on it every week, every day. So it still remains a focus of ours, and we'll be prepared for whatever Cornell throws at us.
And you know they're going to be pressuring you because that's what they do.
Absolutely.
So let's also talk a little bit about, and I should have mentioned this with Michael before, but so Michael has 98 career goals, 149 career assists. He's two away from 100 goals. If he gets two goals in the game on Saturday, or if Princeton makes the Ivy tournament, if he gets two more goals by the end of this year, he'll join Jesse Hubbard and Chris Massey as the only Princeton players with 100 goals by the end of their junior year. You don't think of Michael as a goal scorer. The other thing is that in the entire history of Ivy League lacrosse, there have been five players who've had at least 100 goals and 100 assists for their career. And now Michael could do it on Saturday, and so could Jeff Teat, because Jeff Teat has 133 career assists and 98 goals. So if either or both get two goals, that's the sixth and seventh guys to do it. Obviously, Teat is a great player, focal point of whatever you do regarding Cornell, but Cornell has a ton of offensive weapons. Clark Peterson was the fifth pick in the PLL draft last night. Did you stay up and watch that, by the way?
I actually tried, and I watched some outstanding playoff hockey, which I love. I'm a huge hockey fan, but it ran a little too late.
Who was your hockey team?
I'm a New York Rangers fan. Okay. I was a Hartford Whalers fan growing up, you know, but when they went down to Carolina, we all kind of shifted over to the Garden.
But so many offensive weapons that Cornell has. Connor Fletcher, you know, a big middie who shoots it really hard. You know, it's a great offensive team. A lot of challenges for you guys as you prepare.
Sure. I mean, you know, Teat and Sowers are two, you know, they're two of the premier players in the Ivy League. It'll be one heck of a matchup. You know, both players get game planned extensively throughout the year. So, but you're right, Cornell does. That, you know, they're loaded on the offensive end. They've got a heck of a system. They do a really good job of sharing the ball. And they're an assisted goal scoring team. You know, they do a very nice job of making the extra pass and finding the open man. And Teat's a big part of that, but they've got some really nice complementary pieces around them. Like you had mentioned, Connor Fletcher is a big downhill dodger. Clark Peterson's a heck of a player on the righty wing. The McCullough kid, they've got a lot of nice pieces over there.
And their goalie, Chase Erland, who's T.D. Erland's brother, a freshman, has sort of taken over that position.
He's played three-time
Ivy player, rookie of the week.
Yeah, he's really coming to his own. He's a big body. You know, there have been a lot of big bodies in cage in the Ivy League this year, and he seems to be one of them. He's doing a nice job for them.
So it's Princeton-Cornell Saturday. That's a noon start in Ithaca. The women play at 3 o'clock at Schoolcraft Field as well. A win by the Princeton women there gives them at least a share of the Ivy League championship. We will be back next week to talk about how all of this unfolded and hopefully to see Princeton playing in the Ivy League tournament. Good luck when you get to Ithaca. It should be an interesting show on Saturday.
Yeah, we're really fired up for it, and thank you.
So Princeton Cornell on Saturday coming up in Ithaca, and we'll be back next week to talk about it. For Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us here on the Princeton Laxcast, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.